Hello, it's Joanne Staffnell here from Triton Legal. Now, I'm sure that the risk management teams of all law firms emphasise the importance of sending out retainer letters to clients at the beginning of a new instruction, not least because they are a legal requirement in many jurisdictions. So I'm not going to simply remind you of what you already know. Instead, let's talk about retainer letters at a more sophisticated level. Now, this may sound a bit irrelevant, but bear with me. I hope you remember the singer Meatloaf, who had a hit song called I Would Do Anything for Love. Now, in case anyone has forgotten it, the lyrics of that song finish with I would do anything for love, I would do anything for love, but I won't do that. Now, I don't normally suggest that good risk management includes following advice from Meatloaf, but I think this is the exception to the rule. Now, most lawyers, particularly as they become more senior, have at least some involvement in winning new business. And as you may have noticed in your own practices, at the early stages, the lawyer has to highlight all the services that the firm could provide. So it's like the beginning of the Meatloaf song. I would do anything for your business. I would draft that contract. I would conduct that negotiation. I would advise on these problems, etc., etc. And that is normal. But for a lot of lawyers that I represent, the problem then starts when the lawyer has won the client and is entering into a retainer. It's as if the lawyer is still in salesman mode. The lawyer does have to list all the services the firm will provide and the agreed fee for them. But unlike Meatloaf, the lawyer often doesn't finish with saying, "But I won't do that." It's as if they are reluctant to draw a line in the sand and actually say to the client, "This retainer does not include me doing any work on a particular aspect." And this reluctance can actually cause complaints and negligence claims. Here's a recent example I worked on. My client, David, was a lawyer who had won a new instruction for a corporate client to work on a quite large merger. David had to fight hard to win this client and the instruction, and he had made sure that the client knew that his firm could offer the full service on the merger, corporate, tax, employment, everything. Over the course of discussions, David got the impression that the client wasn't actually interested in the lawyer doing the tax work, and he was instead planning to instruct a large accountancy firm to cover that aspect. David was nevertheless delighted to win the client and sent off a very basic retainer letter confirming that the firm would act on the deal. The merger deal completed, and David thought that everything had gone really well. So imagine his horror nearly a year later when his client came back to him complaining that the transaction had not been structured in the most tax-efficient way. The client said that it was going to claim several hundreds of thousands of pounds in compensation for the additional tax it would have to pay. But David explained that he thought that the advice on tax structuring was the responsibility of the accountants. But it turned out that the accountants thought that it was David's responsibility. And the retainer letter wasn't much help in resolving the dispute because it was ambiguous as to whether the tax advice formed part of the lawyer's retainer. It is such a simple thing in hindsight, but if there is a specific area that you don't believe you are being instructed to work on, there's no harm at all in saying so in the retainer letter. Imagine if David had written in his retainer letter, "I understand that you have retained accountants to advise on structuring the deal in a tax-efficient way, and therefore this retainer does not include advice on tax matters or structuring for tax efficiency." Presumably, the client would have realised at the time that there was a confusion that needed to be corrected, and the problem would never have arisen. Even if the client had still tried to bring a claim, David would have had a much better defence that tax structuring was simply not his responsibility. Also, if the scope of the retainer changes over the course of a deal, make sure the letter of retainer is updated. Think of the retainer as a living instrument rather than an administrative job that's done once the file is opened. So next time you're agreeing or updating the scope of your retainer with your client, think of Meatloaf. Once you've agreed what you will do for your client, and once you've drawn that line in the sand, don't be afraid to make sure that everybody is clear about where your responsibility ends by saying, "But I won't do that." The matters discussed in this podcast should not be applied to any particular set of facts without seeking legal advice. This podcast was recorded at Alaska Studios, London.